Oh, hey, how are you? Great to hear.
Yeah, come in. Make yourself comfortable.
Like a drink?
Sure.
There you go.
Welcome to the Tech Lounge.
Shall we begin?
Welcome to the Tech Lounge with me, Christian Chiller. So, birthday wishes are in order. Not for me, not even for my guest, but to the venerable database MySQL, which turned 30 this year. It's had quite a history. I think we could probably all agree, good and bad, but it's still going. It's still one of the most popular databases out there, despite what many may try to tell you. Well, shall we say most used? Popular and most used are not necessarily the same thing, are they? So to celebrate that, I have an article which you can find on my blog, but also I have an interview with Peter from Pecona. Pecona maintain a fork for their customers as well as their own open source contributions of MySQL. And Peter has also been using MySQL for most of the past 30 years. So enjoy. But before we do get to that interview, here is a word from some sponsors. Git is an essential tool and workflow for almost any developer in the world these days. And Git can be easy for some, but hard for others. And I've always been a fan of Git graphical tools, Git GUIs that help me and could help you understand some of those more esoteric commands or just speed up what you do on a regular basis. Tower is perhaps one of the oldest and preeminent and best known Mac and Windows Git GUIs. And if you want to get 25% off their full price tool, then head on over to go.christianchiller.com/tower. Peter, if I couldn't remember your name, you have it like on the wall behind you. So it's
very Peter Zaitsev. Yeah.
It makes it very easy. It's quite an interesting collection of things behind you. Of course, I'm just trying to read book titles.
Yeah, that's I need probably to put some more thoughts, put some, you know, better books there. Yeah.
I don't know. You seem to have a lot of one book. Is that one of yours? Impossible?
Oh, this one. Inevitable? No. I think this is like the guy I got it from. Actually, it does have my book here. Okay. Thank you very much. I'll rearrange it so it has like a more meaning, right? Yeah.
More promotion.
I think it probably would be. Fun to put something. Yes. You put something naughty out there, right? So people are like, oh, look at that. I didn't think. Well, I think that would be there.
Well, welcome to the show. We're going to talk about a couple of different things, but let's just begin with who you are and where you work. And then we're going to go backwards a bit. But let's begin with more recent things.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. So my name is Peter Zaitsev. I am founder and until a couple of years ago, the CEO of Pecona, the company which helps with open source databases. And besides that, I also have participated in, you know, co-founder or investor advisor or a number of other open source businesses, right? I could name Altinity, which has a cloud for ClickHouse, which is an analytical database, FerretDB, which builds MongoDB alternative, open source MongoDB alternative based on Postgres, and Garut, which, you know, focuses on the observability. So you can see.
Yeah. An awful lot of databases.
A lot of stuff going on in Peter's life.
So you've actually mentioned quite an array there. MySQL. Actually, I'm just looking at the webpage. MySQL, Mongo, Postgres. What do you add on top of these to kind of bring the Pecona?
Yeah, so well, if extra. You look at Pecona focus, right? We focus on the companies who are serious about their databases, right? Okay. Database are mission critical. A lot of those are large enterprise companies with some significant security and compliance needs. And that is what we can provide on the top of open source. If you look in our world, you often have this kind of an interesting situation where what is promoted is the open source edition, like in MySQL, it's MySQL community. And then they say, well, but if you actually want the real deal, you should buy MySQL Enterprise, which is not open source, right? It's like a proprietary software, same as, you know, Oracle or Microsoft SQL, SQL would be, right? And what Percona has, it has the open source software with functionality, which is a functionally equivalent to all those additional enterprise features, right? But it's available in open source package, right? So that is what Percona provides you, right? Hey, if on one extent you're serious if you're about your databases, security compliance is important for you. On the other hand, you don't want to go in that kind of proprietary version, then Percona has it for you.
Okay.
Right. So that is, if you look at our main value proposition, and it's like a difference between the different technologies. Like, I mean, if you think, for example, for MongoDB, well, unfortunately, with MongoDB, change the license of source available. Your corner server MongoDB is also source available. But again, it's still better than, you know, completely proprietary and MongoDB Enterprise they provide. Right.
Yeah.
In Redis, which is kind of the newest ecosystem, right, we enter through Volkey project. Right. So we are helping people to migrate to the Volkey, which is you know, open source fork of Redis, which gone proprietary, and you know, Percona can provide you everything you would expect from, you know, a vendor commercially backing the open source software.
So what do you monetize if the core thing is open source? What are you monetizing on top of that?
Well, if you think about that, we monetize support.
Okay.
Right, like a biggest business for us is support, right? And I think that is a very important piece. What there is a lot of companies, especially mature enterprise companies, right? They want open source, but that kind of open source from a wild is not going to work for them.
Yeah.
They want kind of assurance, convenience. They want to make sure it's kind of there is somebody out there who is committed to providing them kind of a bug fix within a certain period of time, right, and so on and so forth. You just go in on the web and grabbing, let's say, PostgreSQL from postgresql.org just doesn't have that, right? And as I like to explain that to people, saying, look, if you think about the proprietary vendors, right, they're sort of like a Coca-Cola, right? Hey, you know, you can get a Coca-Cola only from a peripheral vendors, right? But if you think about the open source market like Percona, we sell bottled water. Right, you can get essentially like the same water from the tap, right? And it's actually, you know, in many places in the world, good for you, right? There is no functional difference. Mm. But the market of a bottled water is still very big because some people choose to prefer that, right? This case, for extra convenience and assurance, right? In this case, well, and I think that is what Percona provides. So would we have as big business, as a big margin as Coca-Cola? Probably not. Right, but similar to bottled water, you can build a business, right, which where you are not kind of going away of that really open source efforts. And that is what Percona has done.
Mm. Okay, so let's go back in time a little bit, because we're sort of talking around a particular event in about a month's time from time of recording. Mm-hmm. The 30th anniversary of MySQL, MySQL, however, I had to go for MySQL, which I feel like it's one of those database systems that has become so much part of the stack that people almost sort of forget about it in some respects.
Yeah.
30 years is an awful long time. I think when I first started, it was part of the LAMP stack, and it was very common in the early 2000s. That was the M, basically.
Yep.
But so that was only 20 years ago. So it was 10 years before that as well. It has quite a checkered history throughout licensing and different owners and open sourcing and all sorts of things. But where did your journey with it begin?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. That's, you know, a good question. My journey with it began in 1999, right? So I think that's when MySQL was about 4 years old, right? Still pretty young. And interesting enough, that was sort of like an accidental for me. So at that time, I was in Russia and I was starting, you know, some startup which needed a database, right? And one obvious choice was to go ahead and use Oracle, because Russia 90s, all software was free software. But I didn't quite kind of want to do that, right? So I looked at the open source databases, right? And I started in this, you know, computer science in the Moscow State University, right? So we had a lot of people who would understand the engineering, right? And the smart folks, they still liked Postgres at that time, right? This is your kind of I didn't realize
Postgres was that old, to be honest with you. So
Postgres was still, you know, at that time, right? Already, right? I mean, it was not that popular, but that was kind of the database which has all the features which you would expect from a good relational database, right? Yeah. Which we study in school, like, hey, you know, what exactly the database will do with our transactions? Well, PostgreSQL had it. And in MySQL at that time, right, like, and few people remember that, stated in a manual what MySQL will never, ever support transactions because transactions just slow everything down and you just can, you know, work them around if you really need them. Right, that's what it was, right? And so I was looking to choose a Postgres, right? And I remember, you know, talking to someone on ICQ, right, an instant messenger. Of the time, right? And he was saying, hey, why are you thinking about the Postgres? There is this kind of a nice little database called MySQL, which is, you know, much, much faster. And he would show me this kind of a query results if a MySQL and if Postgres, and it was like a much faster MySQL. And I said, oh, that's cool then. Let us go ahead and, you know, build this stuff on MySQL. And that is how my, you know, journey with MySQL started from about, so, you know, 30 seconds of due diligence, right? Which you would, you know, probably expect from, you know, 19-year-old kid I was at that time.
And why do you think it became the so we have with LAMP, it was Linux, Apache, MySQL, PHP. Why do you think it was LAMP and not LAP?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think there are several reasons, right?
Yeah.
I think if you look at the PostgreSQL for years, they have been kind of this very like an elitist database.
Mm.
PostgreSQL was kind of a database for smart people, right? And you know what? And if you're not smart enough to use Postgres, well, then you should probably not use open database at all, right? Like the MySQL approach was, hey, it's a database for everyone. Right, we understand a lot of people, you know, have no clue what they are doing, right? And we'll help them to make them successful, right? So MySQL was kind of really focused on making things easy, right? Mm. For example, MySQL had like a 15 minutes rule. How can you get a MySQL, you know, installed and operational in 15 minutes or less? So that easy, that was a main solution in this case. MySQL, for example, added up replication, which was also actually kind of, it didn't even work in all cases, but that was very easy, you know, to get going, right? And a lot of that stuff was around. And I think that is a thing number one, right? The second thing I think which was important is the MySQL founders, they did very well in how you can integrate the ecosystem.
Yep.
MySQL, for example, was default with a PHP, right? They get that integration, you know, right there. If you start writing PHP and you need a database, MySQL, that's going to be it.
Yep.
Or, for example, there was like a predecessor to MySQL, SQL, right? That, you know, few people remember that, but there was a little database.
It's not nothing to do with Microsoft, no.
No. MySQL was a different thing, right? And I think it was kind of really kind of beyond, before my time, right? Like, but it was in those initial years, happened is, the MySQL founders decided to have an interface of a MySQL library to mirror that interface of MSQL. So you could essentially run the script to experience, you know, MSQL connect with MySQL connect, right? And all that kind of stuff. And boom, now you convert your software to run with MySQL, right? And that's how we can get that easy, you know, jolt of comparability, right?
Yeah.
And the last thing, and I would say, and you know what, I think this is kind of like a quintessential part of success of the many other open source projects I was successful with, is fanatical support, and not just of the users, but of the community. Right? Like in this case, before I worked at MySQL, my company, we never paid MySQL a cent, right? And I would unleash kind of, you know, like a Monty, why this kind of a MySQL of yours is crashing, corrupting my data, right? I was a very, you know, eager writing all that stuff, right? And I would get responses what looked at, you know, any in the middle of the night, kind of, you know, 2 years later, okay, you know, hey, I could repeat a problem, bug fixed, right? Like in this case. And I think that is very, very essential. Right, yeah. They really kind of working with community, getting the speed.
And 30 years, a lot has changed, and my SQL has gone through many kind of periods of, you know, people saying it was too slow, relational didn't make sense. We had NoSQL, we had graph databases, vector databases. They've had a sort of resurgence of popularity. In the early days of containers, relational databases kind of didn't work. We'll come back to that later. But it's still around 30 years later. So what kept it going in that time?
Yeah. Well, so, you know, what is very interesting, right? I think we just recently celebrated, I think it was like last year, kind of 50 years of SQL, right? And that is where a lot of questions they're asked about that as well, right? And I think this is like a very interesting, right, to what extent there have been kind of those number of waves, right? Even, you know, before NoSQL, right? You may remember, or I remember, like in maybe 90s, there was like an XML databases, right? Or it was like an object databases, right? But at the same time, you can still see the SQL kind of remains that kind of lingua franca of a database world, right? Like in this case. And relational remains kind of a way how we, you know, organize the data, right? And I think that's, you know, that makes sense, right? Because in many cases, data is for very kind of long term, right? It's kind of fair if you look at the applications, right? You often, you know, want, hey, we can write it much faster than new programming languages or the new kind of architecture, right? And so on and so forth. But if the data, often you want to put it in the same format, right? And if you are big enterprise, right, it's probably going to be decades you want to work with that. Even though your application stack may, you know, change multiple of times, right? And that is why the database world, in certain cases, it's very, very conservative, right? That's where SQL exists. And in certain other cases, then it becomes like a very innovative, right? So that's where you have like a vector search or Redis, you know, SQL, right? And you have a lot of kind of innovation coming out, right? And each kind of, you know, coexist, right? So if you look in this case, I think the SQL is not going away within, you know, next several decades, at least, right? And MySQL too, right? Like in this case, there have been so much stuff built based on MySQL over the last, 30 years, when that is going to remain for a long time. Now, the real question is, I think, is, okay, what are developers choosing right now? Right? What technologies are building the stuff, right? And I think this is kind of not a secret. That is where PostgreSQL has became that kind of the most popular open source database, right, for building new applications, right? So that is, reality MySQL faces with, right? And I think a lot of that is connected kind of not, I mean, you know, like I think a lot of folks, engineers, right, they often like to talk about like technical superiority, right? But I think that is,
doesn't always matter,
you know,
does it?
Unfortunately, right, to all the engineers, right, it's not like what the best technology has always been, right? That's kind of like a politics and marketing, right? That's what
simplicity
plays a very important part.
I think that's my main memory of I haven't really had to set up MySQL databases for a while, but it was never particularly hard to do anything simple. And then you could be more complex if you wanted, but to do simple things was pretty easy. And you had graphical interfaces and things if you wanted to do it that way. Was it PHP MyAdmin? So many like desktop tools, all of these things existed that let you,
Well, but I think like here is something I wanted to highlight, right? Because if you think, you know, now it's sort of like a decade plus ago, right? You would need to set, if you want to run the database, you need to set it up, right? And that would be like, and the PostgreSQL would be much harder than MySQL, especially if you want to set up, let's say, replication, availability cluster, and so on and so forth. And then what happened is, cloud came about, right? And what that means for those kind of, you know, developers who do not want to care about databases and they just need something, you know, simple, which works, doesn't kind of lose the data, maybe have some basic backups built in and so on and so forth, right? They can just use a cloud. And the cloud became commodity. If you think about the MySQL, Postgres, it's not only available from solutions like Amazon, right? Or Google, right? You can go to, you know, like DigitalOcean, right? Yep. And many, many kind of smaller cloud vendors, some local cloud vendors you may prefer, right? So this kind of databases in the cloud became ubiquitous. And that means you don't have to care, unless you want to, about if complexity is a setting up and running database. Yep. And I think that was also very important support for Postgres over MySQL.
Let's actually talk about that. Let's come forward, not even to recent history, but probably like the past 10 to 7 years.
Yeah.
Traditionally, and to be honest with you, it's been a while since I even looked. I'm just assuming. In the, I think around 2006, 7, you know, running things like MySQL and Postgres in containers was kind of hard because they're supposed to be stateless, because they want to replicate, maintaining data between restarts and things like that. I'm assuming that challenge has now been long since resolved. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. But
yeah, no, look, I mean, if you look at this case in the containers, and I think especially in the Kubernetes environment, right? Indeed, this was kind of a very, you know, funny how things evolved, right? Yep. It's kind of same as well with MySQL. We started saying, hey, we're never going to support transaction. And then now 99.9%, right, runs on the transactional storage engine.
Yeah, right. The same
if you look at the kind of Kubernetes saying, hey, you know what? Oh, it's for stateless application. You know, don't ever, ever think about putting your database on Kubernetes unless you really want to lose your data. And now a few years, you know, forward, now you see a lot of people running database on Kubernetes, right? You can see even a lot of, you know, public cloud solutions are built on a Kubernetes, right, for their database as a service enterprise. So it is right now a solved problem, right, in this case. But it's also, I wouldn't say it's kind of completely without a challenge, right, because how you configure Kubernetes for stateless applications, right, and how you do that for database is different, and that requires additional skill. Right. For example, your stateless applications, they don't really care about the storage. Right. Hey, you know, what a storage is, how fast or slow it is. Like your web application is, you know, just loaded in the cache and it's kind of operating from there. For a database, it's very important what you have, reliable storage, right, which is configured in a Kubernetes. And you need to do that correctly. If you don't do it, you risk performance problems or losing the data. Right. So and there is a number of things like that. But it is essentially, I would say, like a solved problem, right? But because a lot of this, you know, like a best practices, how you configure Kubernetes and so on, so it's tailored to those kind of like small, light, no stateless applications, right? Well, database require a little bit different practices.
So I guess this is where the various cloud vendors kind of stepped into that because they just kept it separate somewhere else.
Well, yeah, that is again, but I think it is interesting, right, in this case is, they're seeing more and more comfort of people, right, running database on Kubernetes because reality is, if you think about the cloud vendors, they are also working on increasing their prices, especially relatively to the cost of a base infrastructure, right? So if you're just saying, hey, you know, I just have a small Amazon RDS, right, for example, versus EC2 instance, right? Well, look, you may be paying an extra $100 a month. Doesn't matter. On a small scale, your time is more valuable. You're using RDS and that is smart. Now, if you're looking at, you know, 100 or 1,000 instances, right, the difference in the costs may be hundreds of thousands or $1 million a month, right, like in this case. And that is the case where investing in, you know, knowing how to run the databases on Kubernetes, right, and providing some tooling, what, for example, you know, Percona provides for that, that kind of makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. This is, I assume this is the Everest with OpenShift?
Well, the Everest, yes, the Everest is a software. So let me kind of maybe explain a little bit how, you know, Percona approaches that, right? So I mentioned in the start.
It's different databases as well, yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah, we do have that number of a database technologies we support, right? And we have our own build of them, right? Yeah. MySQL, MongoDB, Postgres, now key, right?
Yeah.
We also provide the operators. The operators is a way how you run those databases on Kubernetes.
Yes,
and that is actually awesome way to do it, right? Because it really, you know, removes a lot of that friction, right? It's very easy to scale.
Yeah.
You know, you can just, you know, do backups, restores. It has like a self-healing built-in and so on and so forth, right? But it is, and it works very well, right, for people who are familiar in the Kubernetes, who understands that sort of, you know, infrastructure as a code approach, right, and so on and so forth, right? Mm-hmm. But if you're somebody who was brought on the Amazon RDS, you find that UX kind of different, right? And for those, we also provide Percona Everest. The Percona Everest provides you essentially experience equivalent to the Amazon RDS, Google Cloud SQL, right, or any kind of other things, right, where you can use API, right, or deploy the database with a few clicks, but all without those kind of extra vendor charges and the vendor lock-in.
And this is what OpenShift is what lets you
OpenShift. Yeah, Shift is one of technologies, right, we support, right? I mean, OpenShift is kind of this modify, improved, kind of more secure version of Kubernetes by Red Hat, right, which requires some additional support from vendor and certification. That is what we have done with Everest as well.
So we're rapidly running out of time already. I feel like we've barely started. But so you mentioned ClickHouse in there, which is a very popular analytics database at the moment.
Yeah.
I, in passing, mentioned like Graph and Vector, which are not really new, but they're having a resurgence because of LLMs. I mean, firstly, can MySQL also be used in those situations? Is it featureful enough to work these applications too? Or
yeah, so I think there are two things here, right? I mean, if you look at the vector applications, right? A vector is something like, you know, JSON or XML before it, right? That is a feature which can and probably should be added to a lot of different databases, right? So far, it was added to many relational databases. For example, Postgres has awesome PG vector support, right? Yep. MariaDB came with a vector support as well.
Yep.
Now, there are some party patches for MySQL, but unfortunately, Oracle have not been doing that. Right? And that is kind of one of my complaints if Oracle kind of intentionally crippling MySQL through inaction, right, in this case, because they focus and say, hey, you guys want to build LLM applications, welcome to our wonderful proprietary world of HeatWave.
Exactly.
That is where we can help you, right? Yeah. But we can and we should. Now, if you think about like a ClickHouse, that is where situation kind of is slightly different because they're analytical databases, right, versus transactional databases, they are often built on very different engineering principles, right? Mm. Say, you know, we want to have like a column store. It has to be, you know, distributed by default, right? Because the amount of data we deal with, right, is, you know, petabytes. We have to support multiple CPUs, right? And this is kind of all the things that ClickHouse does. And let's say SQL, MySQL doesn't, right? So while if you look at that, there are some relational databases, right? There's like in some databases operate in this HTAP space, then it can do both of those at the same time. That often happens by essentially having like a two engines in a single database, which stores data both for your, you know, transactional and then for analytical, you know, at the same time. That's kind of, it requires a lot more, you know, effort, if you will.
Okay. So I don't know about 30 years, but let's look to maybe the next 1, 2, 5 years. What do you know about? Obviously, you mentioned Oracle in there already. It's kind of interesting that I think what you said is a good description of the relationship a little bit. What do you see coming down the line for new features in MySQL or in Percona's particular forks of it that you would like people to know about? What are new features?
Yeah, look, first, I think it's good to understand the Percona focus, right?
Yeah.
We have understood early on that you cannot really be the same and different at the same time, right? Our focus has been always, hey, we provide you 100% compatibility of MySQL.
Mm.
And because of that, we have to be very humble in terms of what changes we do. Otherwise, we just cannot kind of reconcile that and have the same together, right? So if you look at the MySQL world, hey, if you really need compatibility with Oracle's MySQL, but you want that like an open source, Percona server is for you, right? Mm-hmm. If you're looking for, you know, complete fork, which is not always compatible, right? But that means they also like are free to explore functionality, well, there is MariaDB,
yep.
right? Product on the market. And that is something that we are continuing to do, right? If you look at Percona, hey, we want to make sure we get all those enterprise features we can add, right? But if I would getting into like a core of MySQL, which is important to reconcile. For example, one cool feature we have introduced recently is writing storage engines in stored procedures in a JavaScript.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. That is something which Oracle, released only in the enterprise version. I don't know what they're thinking, right? I think that would be awesome feature for community edition, that is something which we did, right? Because that allows us to build that as an kind of extension, which is feasible for us to maintain. I think that is a very cool thing. And I think what is very interesting for me, what I would say, is more of that like a big kind of future of MySQL,
mm-hmm.
right? Because we have seen this, Oracle not really being a good leader of a MySQL community in terms of not really doing the features modern developers need. That is relatively recent developments.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, right, actually for many, many years after Oracle acquired MySQL, we really were very good at having MySQL as a best database for modern web, right? They did not really try to cripple it. Yeah, maybe they wouldn't go into making it easy to move from Oracle to MySQL, right? But for that market, they did it awesome, right? And with the recent steps, like vector search, like JavaScript store procedures, that means, hey, you know what? This is features definitely it modern web developers need and want, but you are locking them, right?
Yeah.
And I think it kind of becomes a question, right? To what extent we may see something similar to what happened, to Valky, OpenSearch and Elastic saying, hey, maybe community will successfully organize and say, hey, guys, Oracle, you are not really the leader for that movement anymore. We can take it in our hands.
Yeah.
Right. The challenge, I think, in this case, right? And this is, I would say, like a very funny, right? If Oracle would go ahead and say, hey, guys, you know what? We are so annoyed by Amazon's and the rest of the cloud vendors. So the next version, MySQL 10.0, is not going to be released under GPL license. We really release it under, SSPL or kind of a special fuck you Amazon Oracle license, right? Yeah. Like in this case, because that would be like, oh, everybody gets organized and makes a fork. Now what Oracle is doing is they're kind of like a boiling the frog, right? The MySQL kind of becomes sort of like a crappy and crappy compared to what it could be, right? If you would actually make it awesome. Right, but there is no that kind of a big events which would organize and motivate all the vendors to do that.
It doesn't really feel like Oracle can claim financial hardship from Amazon. Really, they do well enough, don't they? So, let's end on one final question. You've been in this space for nearly 20 years,
mm-hmm.
Either with the Percona one, with the community version, whatever you want. What was the coolest or most interesting use of MySQL you've seen in an application?
Oh, well, I think it is kind of always interesting, right? Where I'm saying like a coolest, it could be like a some of the weirdest, right? Did you have to?
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
Right? Like I remember we would get people storing their DNA sequences, for example, in the MySQL as those kind of like a monster blobs, and you can say, oh, how can you get it in and out and do that process in the fan, because again, like a MySQL is able to do that, but it's kind of not really quite intended for that. I think that would be interesting, right? Or I remember we would have MySQL used for that, like some of those accelerators, like similar to like a Large Hadron Collider or something, right?
It now would be, there's like DNA storage, so you could store DNA on DNA.
Well, that is, I think, some of the, some of the coolest in this case, right? Yeah, but you know what? I would say some of the more interesting and kind of the proudest that would kind of probably come from the early days of MySQL, right? Because at that time, we would have like so many like a small businesses, right? Yep. You remember late 90s, people are just coming to the internet and they say, hey, you know what? We can support those kind of, people to build the businesses with MySQL and open source, which we just couldn't do before, couldn't do 5 years ago, right? And while there's a lot of those, a big, massive deployments of MySQL, I think these are some of the, most interesting in terms
some
of
pride. Some of those probably kind of became big
helping
businesses.
The small guys.
You know, the small ones became big probably.
Yeah, that as well.
Cool. Awesome. It was a great chat. I think we could have gone on longer, but we'll have to wrap it up. And thank you very much for joining me.
I appreciate it. Happy to help.
So that was it. That was our guest today. Thank you very much for joining me in the Tech Lounge. I have been Christian Schiller. If you want to know more about Tech Lounge, head on over to christianschiller.com or please tell your friends about us. It's quiet and cozy in here, but the more listeners, the merrier. You can find more at christianschiller.com/podcast or in the show notes or episode notes, wherever you found this podcast. Thank you very much for joining me, and you're most welcome next time.